This Janet Mefford Today podcast is sponsored by PureFlix's Samson, the biblical story of the last of the Hebrew judges. Rated PG-13, may be inappropriate for children under 13. Samson, in theaters February 16th. More information is available at samson.movie.
This is Janet Mefford Today.
Our confidence is in Christ alone.
Are we going to stand with God, come what may?
If the Word of God says it, I believe it.
And that's the way it is.
And now, here is Janet Mefford.
Well, thank you so much for joining us again. It is always exciting for me to hear the testimony of a Christian whom God has used over many years to point people to Jesus Christ. And in the case of my next guest, the Lord has used him to bless millions of people through the years through Christian music. In this case, I'm talking about Grammy and Dove Award-winning Christian artist Larnell Harris. His stunning voice has been heard everywhere from the White House to the Billy Graham Crusades to the former Soviet Union. But there are aspects of his story that he has not shared publicly until now, but he does it in his new book. It is called Shaped Notes, How Ordinary People with Extraordinary Gifts Influenced My Life and Career. His latest CD is called Disturb Us, Lord. And Larnell, it is just wonderful to have you here. How are you doing?
I am doing fine, Janet, and what a privilege to talk with you.
Oh, no, the privilege is all mine. I want to break out in song and sing with you for about 20 minutes. Now, you have had such a wonderful impact on my life over the years. I just want to say thank you. I have loved and enjoyed and really been blessed by your music for a long time. So thank you so much for being with us.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm just thrilled at how God will use any of us if we'll simply allow it.
Oh, amen.
And Janet, you know what? My prayer hasn't changed much over the years, and that is, Lord, put something in my heart. Teach me how to give it away.
Oh, that's so neat. That's so neat. I love how you start your book out by telling people your parents' story. I think that really is the place where a lot of us need to begin our story, the impact that our parents had on our lives. Talk a little bit, if you would, about how your mom and your dad shaped your story and set you on the course that you've been on all these years.
Well, my mom really started the process by praying my dad into the kingdom. That was the first order of business. And I was probably 4 or 5 years old. I didn't understand everything that was going on, and certainly didn't understand a lot of the grown-up issues that can be had in a young marriage and all of that kind of stuff. But I would sit at my mom's knee at night when she would pray for him. And, you know, Janet, even I knew from hearing those prayers that he didn't have a chance. He didn't have a chance in the world. And he came to know the Lord as his Savior, was a deacon in a church, asked Christ to come into his heart, and broke a cycle. He broke a cycle of guys in our family doing the right thing, being proud of what kind of work they did and what they were involved in, just living a good life. And guess what little boy needed to see that? This one. And I saw my dad become the spiritual head of our family, and started to go to church, and serve the Lord. And so the beginning of it was there. You know, my dad probably went to the eighth grade. My mom to the third grade. But you know what? They have more wisdom than I've ever had. I'm sure that most of your listeners have heard the adage that your parents get wiser as you get older.
Yes.
That certainly did happen. And I just, I love what they put into my heart and my life. And I'm just so thankful to have been raised in a, I can say it, yes, a Christian family, a family that that served the Lord.
Oh, that's so neat. Yeah, because you had mentioned your grandfather had spent time in prison, your dad had gone to jail for bootlegging, but the Lord got a hold of him, and that changed everything, not just for him, but for you and for your kids as well.
It did. It broke that cycle. And my dad came out of prison. He had a trade. He was a baker. And then starts the rest of the book, where God just put people into our lives and into my life. You know, into my dad's life, he put an old guy by the name of Mr. Burke, who owned Burke's Bakery there in Danville, Kentucky. It is still there. And boy, he gave my dad a chance, and dad had come out of come out of prison with a, you know, being able to bake. He has always cooked and enjoyed that. He never cooked much around home. He didn't cook well for four or five, but he cooked for 400 or 500.
Oh, wow.
and boy, we're just being able to walk down Main Street of Danville and South 2nd Street in Danville with his head held high. Somehow, I believe, understanding what God had done, not only in his life, but in our family as he broke that cycle.
That is so neat. Well, as you mentioned in the book, you started singing very young and you started singing in church, I know, about 9 years old, and you had a very high voice. And I know that's paid off for you over time, obviously. But you were urged along by another person who influenced you. You mentioned in the book, Miss Georgie. Can you talk about her?
Miss Georgia Dunahai, she played piano for the church choir, the Baptist church there where I joined when I was 12 years old. Miss Georgia taught piano lessons to every kid in Danville, Kentucky, I got to tell you. And most of them wanted them. I did not want them at all. And my mother and her got together, and I started to take piano lessons. And she found out that I could carry a tune. And as you say, I was a boy soprano. That is no life for a kid. I grew up, I had skirmish after skirmish about singing. Most of it was probably due to my own, in my own making. Miss Georgia would do things like this. She went to my mother one time and she said, Adam A., which was my mom's name, she said, you should not let Larnell play sports that are in the dust, because, you know, like baseball and softball and those kind of things, right, because the dust will hurt his voice. Listen, that woman got on my last nerve. She really did. But you know what? As I've gotten older, Janet, it is my hope that every town, every city, every neighborhood has a Miss Georgie, someone who, you know, she didn't want to sing from, she didn't want to sing from me or my family. She just saw a little boy that she wanted to invest some time in and be sort of a mentor to. And in many cases, these kinds of people do a number of things. One is they sometimes give you a dream.
Yeah.
They give a kid a dream.
Yeah.
And then other times, you know, they take the feeling off of it. You can only go so far. Listen, that is not true. Miss Georgie told me that it wasn't true. And from that first concert that I did in the church with her playing the piano, I got a picture of it with, you know, a little bow tie. I think it's a little Texas tie with those little ribbons on the end of it.
Oh, yeah.
from that first concert, I didn't think about it then, but as I started to record, one of the things I wanted to do was to do some songs that honored Miss Georgia, and I was able to do that.
Oh, neat.
So what a joy that was to me, and I just God has brought person after person after person into my life. There's a photo I saw. It was a turtle on a fence post. I most of your listeners have seen it. I didn't pay a whole lot of attention to it when I saw it. It's been years ago. And then I saw it again, and I got it this time. I saw what the picture was about, and maybe the guy, the person that took the picture was meaning to share this message, that turtle didn't get up on that fence post by itself. Mm-hmm. There were people. There was somebody put it up there. And that's how I feel about my life. Boy, that God has put so many wonderful people in it and shared so many wonderful things. And all of those things, some you take, and some stuff you got to throw away.
Right.
But you know what? Part and parcel, it led me to this prayer. Lord, put something in my heart. Help me and teach me how to give it away.
Right. And I bet all of these mentors of yours looked a lot wiser the older you got, right?
Oh, they did. Of course they did. Because they won't quit. Well, you know, somebody who is truly, they don't hear no. They don't hear, I don't want to do that. You know, I'd say, Miss Georgie, well, I don't think I want to do that. And she'd say, does that mean now?
She sounds awesome. I know.
She's a wonderful lady.
That is
neat. Look, put her and my mom together and you just do it. You know?
Oh, my word. That's hilarious. Well, there's a lot more to talk about. We're going to go to a very quick break. We'll come back with Larnell Harris. His book is called Shape Notes. You're listening to Janet Meffer Today. Stay with us. Janet Meffer today is proud to partner with Preborn to help save babies' lives.
Well, my name is Dan Steiner, and I'm the president of Preborn. Ultrasound truly is a game changer. When a mom comes into a pregnancy center under pressure to abort her child, perhaps the dad's gone, perhaps her mother is pressuring her. Most of the time in her heart, she doesn't want to abort, but what she needs is something that will give her the strength to choose life against the pressures that are forcing her to consider abortion. That's the ultrasound. If she hears her baby's heartbeat and sees that baby on ultrasound, everything's different. 80% of the time, she'll choose life.
Will you join us in saving babies' lives? A $140 sponsorship gives five babies a chance at life, and you'll get a picture of the babies' lives that were saved. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, call now 855-601-BABY or 855-601-2229 or give securely at preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
From PureFlix comes Samson, the biblical story of the last of the Hebrew judges. From his anointing to betrayal to redemption.
My name is Samson, and you will face the wrath of God.
Samson, rated PG-13. May be inappropriate for children under 13. In theaters February 16th. More information is available at samson.movie.
When a cake artist declines to create a custom cake for a same-sex wedding, he's forced to defend his decision in court. That's what happened to Jack Phillips, and the Supreme Court is now deciding his case. Your religious freedom is under serious attack, and that's why your gift to Alliance Defending Freedom is needed right now. Just $100 helps Alliance Defending Freedom provide the necessary resources to fight these pivotal court battles. Call 866-700-1060, or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. That's 866-700-1060. I hate to even interrupt that. What a great voice. You recognize it, of course, Larnell Harris. And what a great book he's put out now, Shaped Notes, How Ordinary People with Extraordinary Gifts Influenced My Life and Career. Larnell, it's really hard for me to turn you off in order to listen to you.
Oh, gee. Well, I appreciate that. You know, I just, I did that at the Brooklyn Tabernacle Church in Brooklyn, New York. We had the choir with everybody there, and it was just, we forgot that we were taping a CD and just had a worship service. And Larry Goss produced that, who was one of my good friends, has passed on, and just a wonderful arranger. And so that brings back some wonderful memories.
Oh, I'll bet. And by the way, folks should know that's off your latest CD, Disturb Us, Lord, which is absolutely fantastic. Songs about the cross. It's just beautiful. So we were talking about your life, your influences, Larnell, and I know you went on. Everybody knows you as a singer, but you had picked up the drums. You got a scholarship to Western Kentucky University. You went on to play with some of these groups. And then people will really start to hone in on when you started in Christian music. And I'm wondering what you thought about entering Christian music at the time that you did, because in many respects, Christian music hadn't really gotten off the ground in a big way, the way CCM took off later on.
Yeah. You know what? I really didn't know that. I was not into all of the ins and outs, though I understood a little bit about what, CCM and where the business point. But you know what? I wanted to sing songs to the Lord, and we started to pick songs and I remember doing the first audition with Word Records. And we just started to sing these songs of faith.
That's beautiful. And you tell the stories in the book about all the different groups you played with, and you got married. Then you talked about this time where you had some difficulty. You had some nodules on your vocal cords, and you said you also were suffering from depression as your career was kind of going on early on. How did the Lord pull you through that time?
You know what? It was a tough time. And though I would not wish it on anybody, you're going to have some of the times like that. You know, you're going to have a time when you're just becoming a Christian. I heard a pastor talked about this yesterday. He said, you know what, when you become a Christian, some issues are guaranteed. And that was what this was about.
Yeah.
I had the formation of nodules. I was singing in a group that traveled around the country doing driver education safety programs in the daytime as a group put together by my friend Thurlow Spurr, a group called the Spurlows. And yes, I played drums in that group. I really enjoyed that. But then about midway through the tour, which lasted 9 months during the school year, I started to sing. And I sang Oh Happy Day. And that was one of my songs in the concert that we called The Splendor of Sacred Songs. And we would invite the young people to our concerts at night. We couldn't give our testimonies in the daytime in the school, but they would come at night, and we would share our testimonies. And we saw many a young person come to the Lord. Well, the first thing that happened was anger. That came about was anger. I felt like I was doing what I was supposed to be doing. I was ministering with the instrument that God gave me. And yet, you know what? You can abuse it. I was a voice major in school, but, and understood and still do understand how the mechanism worked.
Yeah.
But you can abuse it. And I had done that. And God didn't do that. But he certainly used it. I think a long story short here, I was really depending on voice, where it was going to take me, where I could go, how much money I could make doing, singing in wherever that in whatever place I could, and when I started having these troubles, first thing that happened was anger, and then I started to feel sorry for myself, and that you went through that whole depression thing. But the thing that brought me through it was the Word. I bathed in it. I stayed in the Bible, and I stayed there. And one day I woke up, and I was able to say, Lord, if you are going to allow my voice to be taken, or if you don't want me to sing anymore, then you know what? You must have something awfully good coming. The Bible says that he gives us good gifts. All good gifts come from him. So he didn't make that happen. And I come to know, to understand that this was not so much about voice, though that's what was being used to make the point. This was about trust.
Yeah.
You know, I'm trusting in everything that I can do and the places that I can take myself with this vocal talent. And God was saying, you know what? You need to trust in me. We're not going to trust in voice here.
Right.
We're going to trust in me.
Right.
And I have to tell you, it was a lesson learned and one that I've never forgotten. He has to go over it again every once in a while. And I'm thankful for that, because I'm one who believes that, situations of hard times, difficult times, God uses those to has used them in my life to strengthen my faith.
Right.
So I've had to go through other things, but you know what? I'm so thankful, because I came out through that situation when doctors were saying, I don't know if you're going to sound like that again. They'd listen to a recording, or I don't know if you're even going to sing again. When I understood that this was about trusting in God rather than trusting in anything that I could do, I was ready to minister any way that I could. And I knew that if it wasn't singing, it was still going to be honoring to God, and it was going to be a place that he put me. And that lesson still rings true to this day.
That is so neat. That's great. You said, for example, when you were talking in the book about your involvement with the Billy Graham Crusades, you said you learned that singing for 50 people in a church on Sunday morning is just as important as singing for 50,000 people in a crusade, which is absolutely true. And yet I would imagine, because I've heard other CCM artists talk about this quite a bit, here you are as a Christian, you are to humble yourself, you're not to think of yourself more than you ought to think. The Bible tells all of us that we are to be humble and understand that God's grace is what has made us who we are, and all gifts we have are from him. Was there a lot of struggle on your part through the years with all the adulation and then understanding as a Christian, the Lord is the one who's supposed to get all the adulation? Because that's got to be a very hard line to walk sometimes, the way people treat you because you're famous and you're talented and they own your albums and they're fanboying you or fangirling you or what have you. How do you deal with that through the years, that dichotomy that you're supposed to walk that fine line there?
Yeah, you know what? This is going to sound, let me just say it. Okay. There's a song that they used to sing in the church where I grew up in. I grew up in a Pentecostal Holiness church, and my mom was a prayer warrior there. She wore that white dress with them big buttons run down the front.
Oh, yeah.
And she would flat run over you. I mean, just praising the Lord. They used to sing a song, and I that's why I heard it first, and I'm sure that other congregations and other Christians have heard it and have sung it. It's called "You Can't Beat God Given No Matter What, No Matter How You Try." You can't beat God given no matter how you try. When you understand that, and I pray that the Lord will continue to teach me that, go through this with me every day that I live. There is nothing that I can do. I can't sing high enough. I cannot sing loud enough. I can't sing in places that make it true, make it so that I am, or any of us, are ever greater than God. So you know what? I don't have to worry about that.
That's awesome.
God says, go do it, man. sing it like there's no tomorrow. Witness like there's no tomorrow. Love like there's no tomorrow. After all, I'm God. Mm-hmm. I'm turning you loose to go and do my bidding. Because when you understand that there's nothing that you can do that can outdo God, the humility is just there.
I love that. That's so great. I also laughed. I have to confess, I laughed at this part of the book when you were describing the note that your wife Mitzi put up on the refrigerator. That cracked me up. I thought that was so funny. Here you were, nominated. You won your first Grammy. You come home and you see this note from your wife on the fridge that says, be sure to set the garbage out. Don't forget the cans in the garage. I would imagine your wife has had a huge influence on you as well. It sounds like she just kind of admires you and admires your talent, but also keeps your feet on the ground.
See, you know what, Miss Mitzi, and we're celebrating 46 years this coming December.
Oh, congratulations!
And we have a great time here. There are no Grammy winners here in this house. You know, I thought I was that morning that happened. It wasn't the first. Because she's an old school teacher, okay? She has a master's in special ed, loves kids, and taught for many, many years, and is still involved in the lives of children, wanting to make certain that they get kids in close to around our neighborhood here, you know, at our church, to make certain that they get some Christian, good Christian input, but that they understand who God is, or at least hear about Him. And I thought certainly that winning two Grammys, that usual note, it was on the kitchen table or tacked to the refrigerator every morning. And so I thought that certainly this morning it would not be, but it was.
It was.
And it was expressed just as you said it. And you know what? I took out the trash this morning.
Good for you. Well, and I should give her due. She did say congrats on the Grammys. We're proud of you.
Yeah. You know what, Janet, I was taking newspapers to the trash can that had my picture in them. You know what I mean?
I love it. Well, you've got so much good stuff in this book. People are going to have to check it out. It's called Shape Notes by one of my all-time favorites, Larnell Harris. And what an honor to have you here, Larnell.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And have a great day.
You too. God bless you. And we'll be back on Janet Mefford Today. This Janet Mefford Today podcast is brought to you by Preborn. For $140, you can provide ultrasounds to 5 women in crisis pregnancies. Call now, 855-601-BABY. That's 855-601-2229, or visit preborn.com. Welcome back to Janet Meffer Today. Well, we are really honored to stand with Alliance Defending Freedom, the great legal organization that advocates for the right of people to freely live out their faith. And since 1994, ADF has been at the forefront of standing up when government punishes private citizens because it doesn't like their religious beliefs. That's why your gift to their Freedom Fund is needed right now. Just $100 helps Alliance Defending Freedom defend your freedom and provide the necessary resources to fight critical court battles. And thanks to a matching grant, your gift will be doubled right now if you call 866-700-1060. That's 866-700-1060. Well, right now we're going to hear about another really important Alliance Defending Freedom case involving a Christian couple who are owners of a video and film production company that exists to tell great stories that honor God. And they want to move into wedding cinematography, but they were told that under state law in Minnesota, they had to make films that also celebrate so-called same-sex marriages. Carl and Angel Larson join us now, along with Jeremy Tedesco, Senior Counsel and Vice President of U.S. Advocacy and Administration for Alliance Defending Freedom. And it's so great to have all of you here. Welcome.
Thanks
for having us.
All right. Well, great to have you. Carl and Angel, you own Telescope Media Group in Minnesota, as I mentioned. Tell us a little bit about your business and what you do.
Yeah, well, at the core of it, we're storytellers. We've been in business for about 10 years, and we exist to tell stories about the glory of God. And we believe marriage is central to that story. From the very beginning of the Bible all the way to the end, marriage is a consistent theme that God uses to reveal himself to the world. And so we've naturally been attracted to wanting to tell those stories.
Right.
As we explored that option, we discovered that Minnesota law was there forcing us to tell stories that are contrary to those very beliefs. And so that's where we decided to challenge the law, realizing that there were fines and even jail time involved.
Right. Now, you're talking about the Minnesota Human Rights Act. And maybe, Jeremy, what is this act all about? What does this law say?
Yeah, the law says that sexual orientation discrimination is prohibited in relationship to public accommodations in the state. The problem, though, with the law is that it's being used in this case to force private persons like Carl and Angel Larson to promote ideas and to express messages that violate their beliefs. And the Supreme Court has said before in cases that have gone up raising the same questions, you know, that these kind of laws can't be used in a way that coerces speech, that forces people to promote messages and ideas that violate their beliefs. And that's the same thing that Minnesota is doing here. So these kinds of non-discrimination laws are all over the country, yes. In most instances, they protect important things, but they cross the First Amendment threshold. They go to a place they can't go under the law when they compel speech, when they force people to promote ideas that violate their core beliefs.
Right. So in this case, it's not a matter of a same-sex couple has come to you and said, please tell our story. And you said, go away. I'm not going to do it. It's basically saying, in general, you have to promote both forms of marriage, even though only one form of marriage is real.
The state has advertised very aggressively that they're looking for ways to enforce the law, and so that's it's a real threat to our business, even not having entered directly into the marketplace yet.
Wow. Well, that's really unfortunate, because you really want to tell these stories that honor God. You want to be able to run your business the way you see fit. So this then, Carl, is more preemptive in nature. You haven't yet started doing wedding videography, right?
That's correct.
That's crazy. Well, now, what are the penalties? If you violate the Minnesota Human Rights Act, what happens to you? What does the state do to clamp down on you if you were to go forward in a way that aligns with your convictions?
Well, the fines, as we understand them, are $25,000 per incident plus 90 days in jail. And so it's severe, it's looming, and it's causing us to chill our speech until this can be resolved.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem with these kinds of laws, is what Carl said. They result in chilled speech. You know, when people want to exercise their rights, but they realize that the law says if you exercise your rights in this way, in a way that should be protected by the Constitution, you're going to face, you know, crippling fines and maybe even 90 days in jail. Lots of people will just chill their own speech and not speak at all.
Right.
And the courts have said over and over that that's not a result we can tolerate in a free society. That's why they allow the kind of pre-enforcement challenges we're talking about, the kind of lawsuit that Carl and Angel filed, where you file and challenge that unjust law before it's even enforced against you, because it's well established in our law that you don't have to wait for the hammer to drop to challenge an unjust law.
Right. Now, explain legally speaking, Jeremy, why it is that the Larsons do have the right to conduct their business according to their beliefs, and how is ADF defending those rights? How are you going about positioning the case?
Sure. This is a First Amendment free speech and free exercise case. I mean, they have a First Amendment right to create films that are consistent with their beliefs. Filmmaking, video production has always been treated as on the highest rung of First Amendment protected speech. So flip the narrative. Should a democratically inclined filmmaker be forced to, create films that are pro-Trump,
right,
with a Make America Great Again theme? No, they shouldn't be forced to do that under the law.
Right.
And these kind of films, this kind of video production has always been protected by the First Amendment. And so they have that First Amendment right to use their creative talents and to create and tell stories that are consistent with their beliefs and decline to do those things that are inconsistent or violate their beliefs. And so the case is all about free speech. It's all about avoiding government mandates that you violate your core religious beliefs. And, we've gone to court to ask for a declaration that the law can't be applied in a way that forces the Larsons to tell those kinds of stories that violate their beliefs. And it asks for an injunction that tells the state of Minnesota, you have to let the Larsons enter the wedding industry on their terms and allow them to create only those marriage films that they want to create that are consistent with their biblical beliefs.
Makes total sense. Well, one of the things that I say over and over and over again is every time Alliance Defending Freedom takes up a case like this one with Carl and Angel, you're fighting for a lot more than just Carl and Angel. In other words, you're standing up for anybody who might be in that position. And increasingly, we're seeing lots and lots and lots of people in this sort of position.
There's no question. I mean, there's lots of people like Carl and Angel, Christians who believe that marriage is between a man and a woman, who are facing these kinds of coercive threats and demands from the government. But look, this principle is for everybody. It doesn't matter what your views are about marriage or whatever, any other issue you can think of. You should care about the outcome in a case like Carl and Angel's case, because if the government can force Carl and Angel to promote ideas through their films that they disagree with, they can do it to all of us on any issue.
Totally.
And so there's really broad principles, big principles, principles that deal with the idea of what it means to live in a free society, in a pluralistic society where we all have to figure out, despite our differences, how to live together in a tolerant and meaningful way.
Yeah, very well said. Well, and I know, Carl and Angel, you have received death threats. It's not been a very pleasant experience for you at times. What has it meant to you that Alliance Defending Freedom has been there for you, taking on your case and mounting this fight on your behalf?
It's been incredible. Alliance Defending Freedom has helped us to live bravely, live according to our beliefs, and be willing to take on such a challenge. We really want to work for the freedom of all people to live according to their convictions. And without their support, it wouldn't be possible.
Yeah, that's great. Jeremy, where do things stand right now? What's next in this case? I know you're seeking an injunction, but where do things stand at the moment?
Yeah, right now we're at the 8th Circuit Court of Appeals. So unfortunately, we had a ruling against us in the lower court, so we appealed that to the 8th Circuit. We're in the middle of briefing that right now, so the parties are exchanging briefs, and then sometime probably within the next few months, we'll have an oral argument in the case and then expect a decision sometime later this year.
Okay, well, this is why your gift to the Freedom Fund is needed right now. Your gift, again, of $100 helps Alliance Defending Freedom defend your freedom by defending people like Carl and Angel Larson. Again, the number to call, 866-700-1060, 866-700-1060. And joining us has been Carl and Angel Larson, along with Jeremy Tedesco from Alliance Defending Freedom. Thank you so much to all of you for being with us. God bless you, and we appreciate your spending some time with us.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. God bless, and we'll be back on Janet Mefford Today. Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? As a Christian, are you looking for health care that doesn't violate your morals and convictions? We are happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of like-minded Christians who work together to pay for their medical costs. It allows you to decide how, when, and where you will access health care, so you can make the best choice for you and your family. Starting at $107 a month for a single, up to $449 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all the kids. This is how healthcare should be. For more information, call 855-585-4237 or visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org, and regain control over your healthcare costs. That number again, 855-585-4237 or libertyhealthshare.org. Together, we're changing healthcare for good. This is Janet Mefford for Trinity Debt Management, a nonprofit Christian organization that helps people get out of debt. Here is John's story.
When our daughter Emma was born, my wife and I took a hard look at our finances for the first time, and we didn't like what we saw. My wife suggested that I call Trinity. Immediately when I spoke with the counselor for the first time, she was very helpful and put us on a plan for success. Right away, we knew we'd called the right place. We just want everyone out there who might be in our situation to know that there's help.
If credit card debt has you down, Trinity Debt Management can help. Trinity will consolidate your accounts, put a stop to late fees, and reduce your interest rate by up to 60%. Save thousands and become debt-free for keeps. Trinity provides practical solutions and creates hope for tomorrow. Call Trinity at 1-800-793-8752. That's 1-800-793-8752. 1-800-793-8752. This hour of Janet Mefford Today brought to you by Preborn. For your gift of $140, you can give an ultrasound to five women in crisis pregnancies. 855-601-BABY, 855-601-2229, or preborn.com. Well, I want to follow up on something that I discussed a couple of days ago with Alex Schadenberg from the Euthanasia Prevention Coalition, because there are an awful lot of states right now that are considering either changes to existing laws involving physician-assisted suicide or the consideration of enacting such legislation. And it's crazy how many states there are. It just seems to be taking off. Wesley J. Smith at the National Review had this to say about what's going on in Wisconsin. There's a new bill in Wisconsin that would force every doctor who was asked for an assisted suicide by a legally eligible patient to either do the deed or find a doctor who will. And he points out that forcing anybody to participate in a suicide, requiring a physician to procure the death doctor referral, constitutes tyranny. The culture of death brooks no dissent, and this is why we need strong medical conscience laws federally and in every state, enforceable not just administratively, but also through a personal cause of action in civil court. And I agree with him completely. We're seeing more and more of this, by the way. And there are new stats out in Oregon. The 2017 Oregon Annual Assisted Suicide Report is out, and assisted suicide deaths in the state of Oregon hit a record high in 2017. There were 143 reported assisted suicide deaths, up from 138 in 2016. 129 of the 130 people who reportedly ingested lethal drugs died from them. One person survived and died of natural causes. 14 of the deaths, the drugs were prescribed in previous years, and there were 218 lethal prescriptions obtained, up from 204 in 2016. This is just a representation of hopelessness. And a message that's being sent to people that there is a point at which your life doesn't matter anymore and you should die. It's crazy. At what point are you going to go from having death with dignity, quote unquote, to being forced to have the duty to die? In other words, hey, you're old enough. You've lived a long life. You're terminal anyway. We don't need you. Well, I want to play this particular video cut. This is great. This is from a group called Patients' Rights Action Fund. They have a number of really good videos that are anti-euthanasia, anti-physician-assisted suicide. And I wanted to play this one for you. This is a woman by the name of Jeanette Hall. She was diagnosed with colon cancer. She was told she only had about a year to live. This was back in the year 2000, by the way. But she had a doctor by the name of Dr. Kenneth Stevens who made a huge difference in her life when she wanted to commit suicide. Listen to this particular story. This is cut two.
One day I was bleeding so bad that they had to take me by ambulance to the hospital. The doctor came in and said, "Jeanette, you have colon cancer." And it didn't hit me. I just went, "I have to go. I have to take care of my mother. I have to do my work. I have to go." And they said, "You don't understand. You have cancer."
When I first met Ms. Hall, she had been evaluated by her surgeon. Her surgeon had determined that the cancer was inoperable, meaning that it could not be cured with surgery. So he referred her to me for radiation and also chemotherapy. She immediately told me, she said, "I'm not here for the treatment, Dr. Stevens, I'm here for the pills. 2 years ago, I voted for Oregon's assisted suicide law, and that's what I want. I'm here for the pills. I don't want radiation, I don't want chemotherapy."
I reached that point without hope. I was sinking into depression.
I said, "Miss Hall, would you come back and see me next week? Let's talk about this some more." I was able to get better acquainted with her, and I learned that she had a son who was attending the police academy. He was in his late 20s. And I said, "Miss Hall, wouldn't you like to see him graduate?" He was single. I said, "Wouldn't you like to see him get married? Does he know what you're considering here?"
It made me realize there was hope. There was something to live for. And I thank him for that one sentence that brought me back to reality and made me try.
So she did accept the treatment. She received chemotherapy and radiation. She lost her hair temporarily, but the tumor just melted away.
Dr. Stevens, if you had believed in physician-assisted suicide, I wouldn't be here. You didn't give up on me. You didn't abandon me, and that's why I'm still here. These are the kind of doctors we need that give you hope when your hope is gone. Here I am 15 years later, and I went to my son's graduation. It's great to be alive.
I just love that. I had to play that for you because it tells such a clear tale of reality and of right and wrong. Instead of having a doctor who said, "Well, you only have a year to live, let's just give you the pills," he said, "How about we do something else?" And gave her a reason to live. "Don't you want to go to the graduation? Don't you want to go to the wedding?" "Oh, I guess I do have something to live for." Boy, I wish every single person who died in Oregon last year would have had the opportunity to have a doctor like that. Incredible. So we also have Delaware considering an assisted suicide bill. We have the same situation in Ohio. And also in Massachusetts, there were a number of physicians who fought this and who are standing up publicly in the state house and say, "No, we don't want a physician-assisted suicide." I want to play this particular news cut from WWLP, and you can hear some of the other side in this. This is cut one.
Supporters believe the bill's passage would allow terminally ill patients to die peacefully, but a group of doctors is concerned the proposed law could be abused. It's known by many names: medical aid in dying, death with dignity, and physician-assisted suicide. The legislation would allow terminally ill adults with 6 months or less to live to request, obtain, and self-ingest life-ending medication. Marie Manis with the patient rights group Compassion and Choices supports the legislation to give options to people who go through significant pain in the last few months of life.
I support it because I feel it's an option that people should have.
The Massachusetts Medical Society withdrew their opposition to the proposal in December, but there are still some doctors who oppose the legislation with concerns the proposed law could be abused. Family physician Mark Rollo is concerned insurance companies may refuse to cover expensive treatments, but instead offer to pay for life-ending prescription. He said marginalized groups may be steered towards suicide.
"I don't want any of my patients who are poor to get a letter from the state saying that they're not going to pay for medication, but they will pay for suicide pills."
Massachusetts voters narrowly turned down a similar measure on the 2012 ballot.
All right, so that's what's going on in Massachusetts, and you could hear the Compassion and Choices. Oh, people ought to have the option. No, people should not have the option. People should have the option to live, and they should have people surrounding them who want them to live and will fight for them to live insofar as it's possible through modern medicine and prayer. But when somebody comes to the end of their lives, then they need to have palliative care and they need to have compassionate medical care in which you can use drugs that are appropriate to alleviate their pain. I think an awful lot of people, and this is statistically true, often say, I want to have assisted suicide because I don't want to be in terrible pain at the end of my life. Nobody does. But we're in a day and age where that's almost not even an issue. We have so many pharmacological options for people who are in pain, and there's so many things we can do to help people have the comfort that they need at the end of their lives, and we just can't give up on people. By the way, the bill in Delaware, which was introduced last month, would allow assisted suicide for terminally ill patients over the age of 18. But listen to this, as BioEdge reports, there's an amendment to the bill stating that patients with an intellectual disability can receive assisted suicide provided they are deemed competent by a social worker. Isn't that sick? And Wesley Smith said these are people who can't legally enter contracts. They can't make their own medical decisions. Yet if they have a terminal illness, they're going to be able to commit assisted suicide if a social worker who may be ideologically predisposed in favor confirms that they understand they're receiving a poison prescription. This is how sick it's getting. And I am telling you about this because if you're living in one of these states where they are thinking about passing one of these measures, and Oregon has another one that would leave Alzheimer's and dementia patients absolutely defenseless, you need to stand up for people. You need to stand up for human life at the end of people's lives. I mean, you heard that story of Jeanette Hall. She was given a year to live. She's still alive. And that was 18 years ago. So it's not always hopeless. And doctors don't know everything. And it sure is final if somebody chooses a physician-assisted suicide. And some of these bills are very scary in that they want to grab the consciences of these doctors who are against this, as they should be, and say you have to refer somebody to a doctor who will kill that person. That's completely immoral, absolutely the opposite of the Hippocratic Oath. And we need to stand with doctors who are standing for what is ethical. We live in very trying times, so this is something we all need to be in prayer about as well. From PureFlix comes the biblical story of one of the last of the Hebrew judges, Samson. Rated PG-13, maybe inappropriate for children under 13. Samson in theaters February 16th. More information is available at samson.movie. Thank you so much for joining us on Janet Mefford today. We always appreciate you tuning in, and we'll see you next time. God bless.